I think this will help people breathe better because it isn't all coming at us at once.
Fairbanks area residents react to the decision to keep the F-16s at Eielson. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 27th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a renewed congressional effort to change the name of North America's highest peak.
You're more than welcome to go right on referring to the mountain as Mount McKinley, just as Alaskans have always referred to the mountain as Denali.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on Careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The U.S. Justice Department today gave its approval or pre-clearance to Alaska's new redistricting plan. Alaska Redistricting Board Chair Taylor Bickford says the amended proclamation plan can now be used as a voting map for the November elections.
More than anything, we're happy for the state of Alaska. This is a milestone, both for the board, but really for the state, because it means that the 2012 elections can move forward without interruption.
The DOJ approval came in the form of a letter to the redistricting board. The move does not bar subsequent litigation, but it does make moot a pending lawsuit that was to have been heard tomorrow in federal court. The suit hinged on a complaint that the State Division of Elections was going forward with election plans before the DOJ approved the new redistricting map. The Federal Bureau of Land Management says that it has already cleaned up two of what are called legacy wells this year in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. But work on a third one is unlikely this year unless another avenue of funding comes through. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The old well sites are owned by the federal government and are among 137 drilled between 1944 and 1981 to explore the petroleum reserves in the area. Most of them were abandoned and are out of compliance with state and federal environmental standards. Only 16 have been satisfactorily cleaned up. K.J. Mashovic with the Bureau of Land Management says remediation work on the Umiat 6 and 7 wells were completed this spring. Umiat is located about 100 miles south of Prudhoe Bay. However, she says the Ico Bay No. 1 well near Barrow is leaking natural gas and is at the top of the agency's list of wells that need plugging. Ico Bay 1 is the agency's top priority for remediation.
In the relative vicinity of that well, there are additional wells that we might be able to look at maximizing cost efficiency. So BLM is putting together different packages with different options to send to Washington for consideration on possibly getting more than just the Ico Bay well plugged as part of a plan.
Anchorage Republican Charisse Millett sponsored a resolution the legislature passed this year, noting that more than $9 billion the federal government has received in leases for NPRA and asking these properties be fixed. Millett says 48 of the wells are completely out of compliance based on federal and state standards, with nothing having been done to them. And several have been badly plugged. She says the BLM has to understand that the state will not relax until all the well sites are clean. She's talked to the state's congressional delegation about a statutory requirement that a percentage of future lease sales be dedicated to remediation.
When we set up TAPS, we have a remediation fund to take TAPS down, and that's something that I think going forward in the future that we should be aware of when we deal with the federal government. So we ensure that Alaskans' land is taken care of in the way Alaskans see fit, and that we hold every other operator to that same standard.
She says a current list of the wells and remediation costs is not available, although a BLM status report is expected to be released sometime in the next fiscal year. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Members of the state's congressional delegation are weighing in on the Air Force's decision to suspend the relocation of the F-16 Aggressor Squadron from Eielson Air Force Base to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. In a news release, Representative Don Young said he was pleased with the decision. Young says the Air Force had a responsibility to present all the facts and prove to Alaskans that moving the F-16s was the right thing to do. Alaska Senator Mark Begich was informed of the suspension in a letter from Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz on Tuesday. In a letter, General Schwartz writes that Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta is directing the Air Force to suspend all force structure changes until Congress completes action on funding appropriations for the military in fiscal year 2013. North Pole Mayor Doug Isaacson is part of the Tiger Team that meets weekly to discuss the local impact of the proposed relocation. The suspension doesn't mean the F-16 squadron won't move in future, but Isaacson says it offers some relief.
This, on top of Flint Hills announcing its reductions, on top of the railroad bed, announcing its reductions. I think this will help people breathe better because it isn't all coming at us at once.
The suspension comes on the heels of a meeting Wednesday of the Joint Armed Services Committee convened by the legislature. The committee discussed the future of Eielson. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says there are plenty of opportunities that could keep the Air Force from downsizing the base in coming years.
What other missions can come to Eielson? You know, we have the JPARC expansion. We have UAVs that are possible, that are being discussed. State legislature gave $5 million towards those type of projects.
Both Hopkins and Isaacson say the mayor's Tiger Team will continue to meet regularly to discuss the impact of the military on the local community. There's an update on the vintage plane wreckage retrieved from Colony Glacier this month. Further details released today indicate that the plane has been positively correlated to the U.S. Air Force C-124 Globemaster aircraft that crashed in 1952. Captain Jamie Dobson is a public affairs officer with the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command, which conducted the investigation.
And that had 52 passengers on board.
Dobson says the crash was well documented at the time.
One of the most prominent theories we have on it is that when it crashed, an avalanche fell down on top of it, and that's actually supported by documentation during that time. Recovery efforts went out to find the site. The only thing they could see almost was the tail portion of the plane. They continued to have bad weather during this time, trying to send out recovery operations, and it got to the point where either because snow falling on top of it or the wreckage sliding down, they were no longer able to locate it.
Dobson says the wreckage has been buried in and carried along with the glacier for 60 years. She says some of the lighter remains made it to the surface more recently and triggered an investigation. The Globemaster was the largest plane of its type at the time, capable of handling cargo as big as a tank or a bulldozer, and if outfitted for transporting passengers, it could carry as many as 200 soldiers. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage innovator works to make riding the bus a bit easier.
It's an extra advantage here in Alaska because when it's 20 degrees, you don't really want to be waiting for the bus too long.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
For thousands of years, the coastal residents of Arctic Alaska have depended on the polar bear for sustenance, utilitarian, and spiritual purposes. The Alaska Nanook Commission was formed to ensure that current and future Alaska Native subsistence hunters will be able to continue to harvest this important resource. The Alaska Nanook Commission, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, would like to hear from subsistence polar bear hunters. Learn more at AlaskaNanookCommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission.
While everyone awaits tomorrow's Supreme Court decision on whether the Affordable Care Act is constitutional, the healthcare field has already been changed by it. The act was designed to be implemented in phases, and one of those phases is about to put some money in the pockets of healthcare consumers across the country. In Alaska, the John Alden Life Insurance Company will be issuing rebates as part of what's known as the 80-20 rule, APRN's Annie Feit reports.
The law says if an insurance company pays out less than 80% of its premiums in health care, it has to return the difference to its customers. For the John Alden Company in Alaska, that amounts to $622, one of the biggest rebates in the country. The company is issuing the rebates for the small group market in Alaska, businesses with between 2 and 50 employees. Company executives declined an interview. In an email statement, the company wrote, "Health care costs and utilization can fluctuate significantly from year to year and market to market. Rebates paid to customers in Alaska will reflect the healthcare claims that John Alden has experienced in the state." State regulators don't see any red flags. Katie Campbell, an actuary with the state's Division of Insurance, points out John Alden has a lot of competition in Alaska.
There are six other insurers writing small group business in Alaska. So an employer could be guaranteed coverage with another insurer if they wanted to, you know, get a lower rate, for example. And in addition, we haven't had any complaints, consumer complaints, that have raised issues with that company.
2,700 John Alden customers in Alaska will get rebates that have to be delivered by August 1st. Depending on each employer's health care plan, the rebate money may go to the employer instead of the employee. The state is in the middle of its first review of all proposed health insurance rate increases, something the Affordable Care Act requires. John Alden's rate increase will be reviewed like the others, but Katie Campbell does not expect that to have a big impact on the price of premiums.
The companies do a fairly good job with their rating, and the impact that we have in our review, therefore, is somewhat limited. It's a high-cost state.
Nationally, 13 million Americans are receiving more than $1 billion in rebates. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
If you go to most cities these days, you can log on to your smartphone and find a bus app that will tell you where the closest bus stop is, when the next bus is coming, and how long it will take to get you to where you want to go. But not in Anchorage yet, but that is about to change. Because of a contest put on by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The yellow markers on Google Maps are all the stops along Route 3, and the next them is the current time that the bus is supposed to arrive there at.
That's Brendan Babb explaining how his mobile public transportation application works. He's on the team of programmers that developed the smartphone app during the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's first annual hackathon contest earlier this month. Babb took first place in the programming competition along with four other teammates for creating the app which will give real-time data on Anchorage buses to riders using smartphones. The app combines municipal bus data with Google Maps to map information from quickest routes to delays. Babb, whose day job is researching Mars rover images for NASA at UAA, says he came up with the idea for the bus app after using similar applications while traveling in other cities for work.
I travel a lot, giving talks at conferences in various cities, and it's really easy to use Google Maps to find buses and take BART and other subways. And I find it's often a lot cheaper and a lot less stressful for me to just take transit to the conferences.
But when he tried to find a similar service in Anchorage, he realized there was none.
Right now there's a bus icon, and when you click on it, it says there's no data.
It's the first time the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation has held the hackathon. More than a dozen coders showed up for the weekend event, which was held at the University of Alaska Anchorage June 15th through the 17th. Babb won some small prizes, but the real award was attracting the interest of the municipality, he says. The Municipal Department of Transportation is working with Babb on developing the bus app further for its People Mover bus system. The municipality actually has real-time data on their website, where you can see the buses moving around on a web page. But Babb says it's more oriented toward the desktop, so it's hard to use on your smartphone. Babb worked with the municipality in advance of the hackathon to line up the data his team would need.
Basically, the project was just getting data so that you can say, I want to go from Snow City to Providence Hospital, and it'll figure out if you need to take two buses and when they come.
The result was the bus app.
It's an extra advantage here in Alaska because when it's 20 degrees, you don't really want to be waiting for the bus too long.
New research on the Chicago transit system supports the use of transit apps. It says that real-time mobile transit applications improve rider experiences, and that better rider experiences translate into higher ridership, greater revenues for transit agencies, and less congestion on roadways. Lance Ahern is the chief information officer for the municipality. Over the next few months, he'll work with Babb to perfect the bus app. Ahern says he hopes the bus app is just the beginning and that the AEDC's next hackathon will spawn additional apps that use municipal data.
Anything that lets me look at where I am on my smartphone and look at different kinds of services that are available to me, whether they're health services, where to vote, information that can be combined with other data sources. So if I take some Muni data and some Google data and maybe the weather data and I kind of mash it up into a single useful app so I don't have to go to three or four different places, to me, that's where we should be going.
The runner-up for the hackathon was an application that improves the Alaska Department of Labor's Career Lattice program by connecting it with real-time job availability data. The Department of Labor is also working with the programmer who created that app, called Job Thingy, to make it live in a few months. Anchorage Economic Development Corporation officials say they have high hopes for the tech industry in Alaska with the expansion of broadband internet, and because tech careers allow people to learn and work in remote locations where so many Alaskans choose to live. They say the next hackathon is tentatively scheduled to take place in Anchorage in February or March of 2013. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The National Park Service does not object to renaming the continent's largest peak, Mount Denali, although it's stopping short of recommending the name change. In a Senate subcommittee hearing on the national parks today, Senator Lisa Murkowski pointed out long-held objections from lawmakers in Ohio.
My response to those folks is you're more than welcome to go right on referring to the mountain as Mount McKinley, just as Alaskans have always referred to the mountain as Denali.
President William McKinley, who was assassinated in his second term, was an Ohio native. The Park Service is also not objecting to legislation in the U.S. Senate that would designate the South Ranger Station in Denali National Park the Walter Harper Talkeetna Ranger Station. Harper, an Athabascan native, was the first to summit the peak 99 years ago. At the hearing Wednesday, Herbert Frost with the Park Service tried to explain the why the agency does not object to renaming the Ranger Station in Denali instead of recommending the change.
It happened before the park was established. The Park Service, it wasn't a Park Service site, so there was no relation to the Park Service per se. It had a direct connection to the mountain, absolutely, and that feat should be recognized. There's no doubt about it.
The Park Service supports naming a visitor center on Cape Cod after former Speaker Tip O'Neill because the Park Service existed during O'Neill's lifetime. The state of Alaska officially recognized the name Denali in 1975.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
Meridian Management, specializing in coordination and management of all phases of construction projects from vision to completion, working to ensure that your project is on time and on budget. More at MeridianAK.com.
The All Alaska Workforce Initiative celebrated its one-year anniversary earlier this week. The program is a joint venture between the state and federal departments of labor and seeks to put Alaskans to work in Alaskan industries. The new Copper River Seafoods processing facility in Kenai has benefited from the program and was the backdrop for the celebration. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports.
And finally, the last station is a final inspection station where we have inspectors who are looking at the inside of the cavity, looking for cleanliness, making sure that the bloodline is removed, any pieces of viscera are removed.
That was the highlight of the day's events here at the mouth of the Kenai River, a tour of the new seafood processing facility at Copper River Seafoods. In addition to dedicating the plant, the open house marked the first anniversary of the All-Alaska Workforce Initiative apprenticeship program run through the Department of Labor, from which Copper River has recruited 15 of its 50 employees in Kenai. Just before things got underway, I had a chance to speak with one of the people in the program, Anya Schoweiler, who started in the Quality Control Department at the beginning of June.
This is my PDA. It's my personal computer, so I don't have to fill out any papers anymore. I can fill it out, and then it goes directly to Anchorage as soon as I sync it. It's all daily reports, hourly reports, and every fishing vessel.
Anya is a prime example of who the apprenticeship program serves, local workers with a background in the industry. With the expansion of Copper River here, she and other workers will have year-round employment in the industry, another goal of the program, as Copper River's Vice President of Business Development, Robin Richardson, explains.
The original canneries and so on, they were seasonal. What we have changed significantly with Copper River and has been part of what the owners have been attempting is to have year-round production.
She says people in the program will develop skills, allowing them to grow with the company and continue to be marketable in other areas. The program encompasses several different areas of the business, from construction and repair to refrigeration to quality control.
We were the first ones in the nation, actually, to have quality control seafood. And so we developed that program ourselves. And so we went ahead and put that together. And now this next year, we're going to add on with marketing, which is a huge key to the seafood industry. And then the other one is IT.
That was training manager Ben Eveland, a longtime resident of the Kenai. He says he's excited about the apprenticeship program because it offers stable employment for residents and the industry. Copper River CEO Blake Scott says the program helps solve the problem businesses used to face in finding qualified employees to produce their products.
You know, it's been very, very hard to find skilled people within our own industry, and also for the labor force out there to realize what kind of opportunities really lie within our industry. So, right now we're very focused on trying to create jobs for local Alaskans.
He says they've been able to cut the number of hires from outside by nearly 50%, with a future goal of hiring exclusively from Alaska. The new plant in Kenai will eventually have the capacity to produce 10 million pounds of seafood annually, brought in from Cook Inlet, Seward, Prince William Sound, and the coastal communities of Western Alaska. Reporting from Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
A two-year project is underway in Sitka Sound this summer to study the rhinoceros auklet. Unlike much of the biological research in the state, the work on this particular seabird is not about unraveling the mystery of its decline. The rhino, as scientists call it for short, is actually thriving. And a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks is going to spend most of her waking hours over the next two summers trying to learn why. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
For Alexis Will, it's pretty much about seabirds and nothing else. Since graduating from Sitka High School 10 years ago, she's been in the field from Antarctica to the Bering Sea, assisting in bird research for a variety of different projects. Now, in pursuit of her own graduate degree, she's got her own project to understand the foraging strategies of the rhinoceros auklet. The study was suggested by mentors in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who, over the course of decades of work in the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, had noticed a gap in their knowledge of seabird ecology. Why, when changes in the environment were putting so many species under pressure, were rhinos thriving? Will says this is an atypical wildlife study.
So instead of going at climate change or changes driven by human activity in a negative way to see, why is this animal declining? We can look at a successful species and say, well, why is it doing well? And then look around to see what other species might be doing well, too, if they experience similar changes.
Rhinoceros auklets range from Southern California to Japan and eat fish, from tiny anchovies to larger rockfish that inhabit the top 10 meters of the ocean's surface. There are about 2,000 nesting pairs on St. Lazaria Island in the mouth of Sitka Sound. They're ungainly birds. They struggle to become and to remain airborne. Their landings are barely controlled disasters. They don't seem like very fierce predators. In fact, Will admits that they're adorable, but they clearly have some advantage, and Will would like to find it.
Rhinoceros auklets are really neat. They have a really long nestling period, so when the chick is in the nest growing. And so this covers about 54 days, And a lot can happen in the ocean in 54 days. You know, new fish move into an area, fish move out of the area. So they kind of cover, in a season, a lot of different ocean conditions. And so by looking at how they adjust their foraging behavior over that time and the adult diet themselves, I can get kind of a handle on how hard they're having to work potentially to find food for themselves and their chick.
This may not seem like such an interesting problem at first, but there's something else about the rhino that makes its success unusual. Other seabirds bring food back to their young throughout the long summer day. Rhinos only return to their chick once in every 24 hours, and always at night.
So they kind of have this a different set of factors to sort of balance when they're out there, because they still need a feed for themselves, but they have, I mean, they have all day. You know how long the sun's up now. And so they have all day to go out there and find food for themselves, but then they really need to maximize that single trip they make for their chicks' food.
Will plans to capture and tag adult rhinos. She'll attach a GPS tag about half the size of a pencil eraser to their tails. This device records the bird's location, and place another tag on its leg that records water depth. She'll replace the tags every 3 to 5 days. Rhinos nest in burrows they've dug in the shallow soils of St. Lazaria, and you'll remember, they only return once a night. That's when Will finds them.
I love to pretend that I'm some sort of ninja of the night. Really, that just involves sitting still in salmonberry bushes on a wet, muddy ground. I'm catching them as they come into their burrows. So I go out there and I set my traps and I lay in wait. And I pretty much wait to hear them come in, and they're not stealthy. They, even though they're using the cover of darkness, it sounds like attack helicopters. They're crashing into tree trunks and falling through the branches, and it's kind of like being in a little bit of a war zone out there.
Other data Will plans to collect include sample feathers from the rhino chicks. They'll be tested for stress hormones that Will can correlate to the food supply. The rhinoceros auklet study is funded by the North Pacific Research Board and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's actually part of an overarching research effort on groundfish. But the ocean ecosystem is a puzzle made up of pieces, and Will's research will contribute to the picture.
We're part of the ecosystem, too, and so understanding what's going on out there is definitely a piece of what I'll be doing and what they're doing as well.
Will plans to spend the next 2 summers on St. Lazaria and the next 2 autumns crunching numbers on campus in Fairbanks. She hopes to complete her thesis and graduate with a master's degree in 2014. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Spack is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Avtech is recruiting rural Alaskans for computer and network training with no cost tuition for qualified applicants. For more about the Village Internet Agent Program, call 1-800-478-5389. This message sponsored by Avtech, Alaska's Institute of Technology.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.